You're tuned in to... Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by the one and only Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. That's how you call us and get on the action. Giants talk, NFL talk with you for the next 1 hour on Giants.com. And today is the last days of organized team activities, which means we're one day closer to Paul Dottino having no football on the practice fields here at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center for more than a month. So, Paul, I figure today's a good day to wrap up kind of what we've seen at OTAs, as much as you can see at these no-contact, unpadded practices and workouts. So let's start there, and we will take your calls all show long. No guests today, folks. So whatever you want to call in and talk about, you can talk about it. It's open lines. It's up to you. You tell us what's going on, and we'll monitor hashtag Giants Chat as well. And of course, it's all brought to you by DraftKings. So, Paulie Dotts, your major takeaways from what you've seen at OTAs over the last 3 weeks?
Well, I have a couple. One on defense is that Steve Spagnuolo is going to use his new toys in a lot of different ways. We have seen already schematically that he's got a lot planned for JPP, for Olivier Vernon. They've mixed and matched a bunch of combinations in the secondary. And it's clear to me that because of all of the extra talent that they've been able to bring in, or additional talent, over the course of this offseason, that Spagnuolo is going to do everything he can to cause trouble for other teams' offenses with these different combinations. That's the first thing I've seen.
You know, it's funny you say that, because we had the Giants Town Hall the other night. You can see a video of it on Giants.com. It's going to air on Giants Access Blue as well. Give you kind of a little look into what some of the people that were there talked about.
Right.
But it was an hour and a half event, so they're not going to have everything up there. So a little clue from what Steve Spagnuolo said. I think I mentioned this on Wednesday at the event on Tuesday night. He was asked that question. With all these new toys, Paul, how can you change what you do? Can you be more aggressive? Can you blitz more? Can you do a lot more? And he said, guys, look, the answer is yes, because I can scheme all I want, but unless you have the players to execute that scheme and win their one-on-one matchups, it ain't going to matter.
No.
And he understands
that. We saw that.
Yes, we did. And I don't think it was his intention to kill the talent level last year. But look, people aren't blind. You saw what you saw on the field. And I think he knows this year that he has better players. He has more playmakers. And like you said, he's going to use them and use them how he thinks are going to be most effective. And it allows him freedom. Like, you don't have to use Janoris Jenkins in a clever way, but if you want to do a clever blitz and say, you know what, go man this guy up on the side of the field, you feel a lot better than last year when you're looking at Jaron Hosley over there. It's just going to make you feel a lot better about it.
Yeah, so that's one thing that I've seen. And then the other thing, quite frankly, is that on the other side of the ball, Sterling Shepard, he's very dynamic, John. And I understand it's only OTAs, but This guy looks like he's been in the league 2 or 3 years. He is incredibly quick. He's incredibly athletic. He's got fly paper for hands. It looks to me like the Giants' passing game is going to really get an injection here from this guy. And that's even without Victor Cruz coming back. I think this rookie is going to make a tremendous impact on this team. And I say that again. He has not lined up against press coverage yet. He has not lined up against physical man-to-man where he's going to get bumped and he's going to get handed off in a one- or two-man bracket zone. None of that stuff's happening here.
And nor has he had to worry about safeties coming up and lining him up in the middle of the field.
None of that's happened yet.
Correct.
However, the stuff that I'm seeing out of him now, the way he conducts himself, the maturity that he shows, the polish that he shows when he's at practice, the way he grabs the football, these are all things that get you excited for his potential. And I'm going to use that word potential because, again, until the preseason starts and he's in games and he's against competition, we really don't know. But I'm seeing something really exciting there.
And, Paul, you know me. When it comes to fans getting overly optimistic expectations for rookies. I like to be the guy that takes the big bucket of ice water and pour it on heads. That's what I do.
But it's fair.
Because
it's fair
I don't
to
want
do
people to lose their minds over rookies when, historically in the NFL, Odell Beckhams are not 1 in 100s, they're 1 in 500s.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't come along that
yeah.
often. But I'm going to do what you just did. However, what you see on the practice field from him.
It's pretty good.
Start and stop quickness, in and out of breaks. I mean, it's NFL caliber. It's Steve Smith-esque when he was here. That's the type of in and out of break stuff he can do. And you see athletes play wide receiver sometimes, and you see the raw ability. He's not an athlete playing wide receiver. He's a wide receiver. He knows what he's doing. There are nuances and little things that he does that, frankly, a guy like Reuben Randall wasn't doing when he left last year. In terms of body positioning, getting in out of breaks, creating separation, there are just things that you see that he can do which tell you that he can make an impact early here. I'm not saying 80 catches. I'm not saying 1,200 yards. I'm not saying 10 touchdowns. I'm not saying any of that. But he's a guy that if you try to cover him one-on-one, you're going to have problems.
What we know from what we've seen, the skill set's there.
The only thing that
That's what we know.
Here's the thing I don't know yet. And I saw him do it at rookie minicamp, but I'm going to throw that out because he's going against a lot of undrafted
right.
free agents and rookies. I'm not sure that he can kill you over the top yet in man coverage. Not positive about that. I think he can.
I suspect he can.
Positive.
Frankly, part
of it is that they don't run a lot of deep routes in practice. That's just the way the Giants run it.
Now, when you said Steve Smith, you meant the Giants Steve Smith.
Of course.
Okay.
Yes.
I think he's Steve Smith with quicks.
I think he's a little bit more athletic than Steve was.
But
I agree with
very
that.
Similar kind of player, but with quicks.
I think he's a more athletic than Steve Smith.
That's pretty good, John.
I'm not sure if he has more quicks than Smith, because remember, people told me that Steve Smith, when he was here, Antonio Pierce said this to me. He was the best wide receiver coming in and out of breaks inside that
yes,
he played against.
There's no question.
And that is a huge comment, and that is quickness.
And he was almost that good coming right out of USC without
correct.
Any work.
I think Shepard will be better after the catch.
I believe
miss,
he will be.
And I think he is better top speed than Smith did.
And I believe because Sterling Shepard is such a big weights guy and such a big strength guy,
yes.
which, quite frankly, physically, John, he looks like a running back.
No, Steve Smith is stocky. He's stocky.
Steve Smith was more stocky, but Sterling Shepard looks
I'm
more
Shepard's stocky. Smith is more lanky, not as strong. I think Shepard's very compact and powerful.
I think Shepard is more sculpted.
That's fair.
That's the word I want
to
use.
I'll go with that.
And I suspect he's going to be better at breaking tackles than Steve Smith
was. Yeah, he has thicker legs. He has thicker arms, wider shoulders, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. All right, folks, those of us watching on Twitter, thanks for joining us. If you want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Couple other quick notes I'll throw out there before I get to our full bank of calls.
Already?
Good job on the phones, guys.
Wow.
And we'll get to you in just a second. A couple of little nuggets I'll throw out there. People like to talk about rookies, but I think one second-year guy that you talked about last year I think has shown improvement back this year. I think Matt Lacoste has done a good job at tight end. I think he's shown a good job playing down the sideline.
Good to see.
And he's caught the ball.
Good to see.
I think he's done a pretty good job. Again, I want to see him block. We're not going to see that, though, until you get the training camp of pads on. So we'll see how he does in that area. But I like what I've seen out of him as a receiver. One thing that's different from Odell Beckham Jr., this year, for the first time, have you noticed when they line up and do individual wide receivers drills, he's always the first guy doing the drill?
He seems much more determined and much more aggressive in practice than I remember.
And he's always the first guy doing every drill. And that wasn't the case the last 2 years. In fact, I think he was always he'd like to be the last guy doing the drill. But he's kind of said, you know what, now my third year, I'm being a leader. I'm taking that first drill in every rep. I like to see that. Eli has looked sharp, no problems there. Goodson and Darian Thompson both seem to be around the ball a lot. They seem to know where they're supposed to be. We'll mm-hmm. see if that transcends when we start doing more stuff. But I like mentally what I've seen from those two guys. I think that's fair to say.
Thompson well ahead of the curve at this point.
Yeah. I have not seen enough yet from my perspective to think that someone's going to break into that top five offensive lineman group. But again, there are no pads. So let's wait till we get physical and start doing stuff before we have an idea. Odighizuwa has looked healthy. He's played in every practice. I think that's a good sign. And I think he's looked pretty explosive trying to rush the passer a little bit. Again, no pads. But I think that's certainly a good sign that he's been on the field.
Owa, to me, and that's the last guy I really wanted to bring up, and I'm glad you finally got to him, because he looks much more assertive,
yep,
confident.
Oh, he has to be.
And, well, John, his rookie year was basically a wash. He hardly played.
Fair point. I'm not going to argue that.
Hardly played.
That's true.
So he's almost as green as a rookie would be. Almost. He looks so sure of himself now, almost like he belongs, as opposed to last year when he was still feeling his way. And if you notice, and again, this goes back to Spags, he's been standing up, he's been on the left, he's been on the right, they've moved him around some,
mm-hmm,
and
he's been inside.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, much like Tuck. That, in fact, you know, we've talked about his skill set and how, you know, a lot of people think he reminds them of O.C.
No,
I'll tell you why.
No, he's much more Tuck than O.C. to me.
He's
absolutely
much more Justin Tuck.
Yeah, because he's a better run stopper than O.C. ever was.
No question. And you know, so many people wanted to compare him to O.C. I'm telling you, the way that Spags is using him here in the spring, he looks like he's going to be Justin Tuck the second,
yeah,
more than he's going to be O.C.
He's quite honestly, and I don't blame him, I wouldn't do it either. I think 95% of the time, you're going to see JPP and Vernon at the ends. Why would you move him? I think those are going to be your ends. And I think a guy like Owa will move inside, Kerry Wynn will move inside, things like that.
Owa does look extremely explosive.
Agree. I think that's a very good sign. Janoris Jenkins, super confident. He loves lining up against Beckham. He takes it as a challenge. He has fun with it. He's not afraid of talking either. Landon Collins looks much more confident directing traffic pre-snap to me.
I agree.
Now, again, I haven't seen him, you know, do a lot of one-on-one coverage stuff, so we'll wait till we get into game situations to see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here's the last thing I'll say. When it comes to the safety position specifically, and I had a conversation about this with somebody the other day, I think it's hard to judge a lot of the safety stuff in practice, and here's why. These guys have been going up against the same offense and the same offensive sets for months. In fact, the guys that were here last year, they've been going against the same offense for years. You kind of know what's coming. It's easy to diagnose it when you're facing the same guys in the same offense all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It gets a lot more challenging when you're getting out there against a team that runs a different scheme and only watched on tape for 2 or 3 days that week. That's when you know how this safety group is going to be able to react and deal with opposing offenses.
It's hard
to really judge when you see them going against the same group of guys in the same formations and the same offense every day. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's certainly easier than having to go up against a different quarterback and a different opponent, different scheme every single week.
I agree with that, John. And the other thing that's huge and we still can't tell beans about is tackling.
Oh, yeah. Big
you
one.
Know, and
big
and
one.
That refers not only to the trenches and to the linebackers, but the safeties in particular who have to make tackles against bigger tight ends a lot during the course of the regular season. They have to come up sometimes and stuff a hole against a running back, okay? Corners, yeah, they got to do run support. They got to come up sometimes against a running back. That's true, but most of their tackles will be against receivers. Safeties need to be able to tackle against bigger guys on a more regular basis. We can't tell any of that right now.
And final thing I'll say, and I said that second, I'll say it again. More so than I think any of the years since I've been here, going back to 2007, you've been here since like 1946.
I know.
We
had radio in those days, folks.
I usually have a pretty good feel. At this point, I know it's early. I can probably name you 48 guys that are going to be on the final 53. You're pretty confident about it. You know the guys that, you know, some of the guys are going to be here. This year, boy, there might be a dozen or more roster spots. We're like, who are the 6th, 7th, and 8th offensive linemen? Who are the 6th, 7th, and 8th defensive linemen?
How about DBs?
Who are the 4th, 5th, 6th, and maybe 7th corners? I got no clue.
Who's at the back end of the receiver depth chart?
How about the back end of the linebacker depth chart?
How about the tight end depth chart?
Dude, I'm telling you, there's literally 12 to 15 roster spots. You're like, I have no idea who's going to be on this roster.
Good news, folks. Unless something dramatic changes,
yeah,
we know we're going to be here.
See, I might know something Paul doesn't.
Oh!
I'm just kidding. All right, let's get to the phone. So I think that's interesting, though, that there's a lot of guys that, you know, you don't have a good feel for. That, you know, there's going to be good competition. That's all I'll say. And that's what the coaches want. That's what Jerry Reese wants.
Well, John, you got to get better. And the only way you get better is through competition.
That. And you know who I like, actually, who's really impressed me? Bobby Rainey. I'm having a tough time figuring out how I'm getting him on the roster. He doesn't drop anything. He has legitimate explosion with his hand on the ball. He's quick. I think he's the most explosive running back on the roster. And that includes Shane Vereen.
Well, you know, Paul Perkins, who was at UCLA because they didn't get the graduation in time to allow him to be here.
Well, they have that dopey four-semester thing instead of the three-semester thing over there, right?
It's a rule.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
well, same thing happened with Adrian Robinson. Remember when UCLA drafted at Cincinnati?
But
not trying to compare those two guys, by the way. Just want to make sure that's
right,
clear.
Right. The rules are as such, just so you folks out there, I don't know if you're aware of this. I do want to make this clear in case people don't know about it. They are allowed to give him video and playbooks.
Okay.
That's within the agreement. They can send him materials. The other thing they can do is after the class day is over at 5 o'clock, they are also allowed to communicate with him.
Oh, okay.
So they can talk, chat, answer questions, allow him to look at video, and then discuss it. There is a certain amount of preparation that he can do within the NFL's labor agreement that, you know, will at least give him, do I say a flavor or a taste?
It's still going to be a lot.
It's still going to be a lot, and he's way behind the eight ball, and it can hurt guys immeasurably as they try to catch up when they finally get here. But just so you folks are aware, it's not like he is secluded out there, you know, like some juries are in a courtroom setting. And guess what? You're sequestered. You can't talk about football. You can't see anything. You got nothing. That's not the case. There is a limited amount that they can do.
And from what I understand, and again, it was 3 days, so who knows, but they were pretty impressed with his mental acuity at rookie minicamp.
Well,
they were pretty happy with his approach and maturity and things like that. So you hope that'll help him catch on quickly once he gets here.
That first impression, you're right, John. I heard exactly the same thing. But the other thing was when they did their homework on him, he played under Jim Mora Jr.'s offense at UCLA, which is a pro-style offense.
Great point.
With a former NFL coach who gave them great information researching him that this guy is an NFL player.
You wonder if that hurt his draft stock. Teams know that. These guys that go to the four-semester schools, whether or not they can be there for the offseason. I don't know. I have no idea because I've never heard that in the draft process. Next year when we do the draft,
so.
I'm going to ask some people about
you
that.
Can.
I wonder.
I don't think so, but, you know.
Like, what happens if one of these guys is a quarterback?
That's a big problem.
That's a big problem. A wide receiver, Paul. Imagine a wide receiver not being there for 3 months in the offseason.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think the QB is the one that would really make me hesitate on a pick.
I want to get to the calls. 201-939-4513. Full lines. Dre in Atlanta. You've been holding the longest. Dre, what's happening, pal? Thanks for calling in.
What's going on, John? What's up, P-Dot?
Hey, how you doing?
It's going good. You know, I'm going to invoke a little logic and probably, you know, let me preface my comment. If Paul Perkins has been studying and picks up the playbook and when he comes in for the training camp, he excels, I can't see him being on a practice squad for one reason only. I don't think the Giants can afford losing him, putting him on the waiver wire, and expecting him to clear waivers to be put on the practice squad.
I agree. I would be very surprised if your fifth-round pick isn't on the 53-man roster. I mean, very rarely have the Giants' fifth-round pick, I don't think it's ever happened in the year I've been here, has to have their fifth-round pick not made the 53. So I agree. I don't think they would put him on the practice squad, and like you said, I don't think he'd make it through waivers to get to the practice squad either.
The only thing I would say about that is provided he doesn't wind up getting himself hurt when he gets here, and I don't want to jinx him. But
I still don't think he'd get through waivers.
Right, but what I'm saying is, well, guys who get to camp late, if they're not properly conditioned, and I'm going to assume he's doing that, but if he's not, and then all of a sudden he pushes himself in camp, oh, now he's got a hamstring. Now he's got a quad. He's got a soft tissue injury. All of a sudden, now he's an IR candidate. It's not about passing him through waivers to practice squad.
If you get an injury IR, that's hurt. Something else.
You know?
Right.
So that's what, that to me, that would be the bad thing, is if he winds up getting himself hurt because he's missed all the time with the Giants weight training people. I will tell you the highest draft pick that I remember, a guy named Greg Mark was a defensive tackle coming out of Miami in 1990, third-round pick by the Giants. They brought him here, and right away, immediately, they wanted to convert him into a linebacker. He could not do it, John. He could not do it. And Parcells is like, nope, get him out of here.
Nah.
And that was it. He was done, never even made it to opening day, and he was a third-round pick. That's the last time I can remember the Giants giving up on such an early draft pick immediately.
In fact, real quick, Dre, and then I will let you finish. Don't go anywhere. I'm going back here. The last draft pick that did not make the 53-man roster, and I'm including IR people here, so if they are put on IR, that counts.
You're talking about a high pick.
I'm talking about any pick.
Okay.
The last time any draft pick was not on the Giants' 53-man roster, I believe, I'm going back to DeAndre Wright and Stoney Woodson. I think, I mean, Darrell Scott was on the 53, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Michael Cox made the 53, right?
No.
Yeah.
Did Matt McCants? Or is he practice squad?
Ooh, I thought he was practice squad.
McCants might have been practice squad. So you know what? Then it's McCants in 2012. And actually, you know what? Eric Herman in 2013 was practice squad too, right?
He was practice squad.
All right. So you got Herman and McCants, a 6 and a 7. And then you go back to DeAndre Wright and Stoney Woodson, who I don't even think made the practice
squad.
Weren't those guys outright cut?
I wanted to check this. Charlie Pepper. He was practice squad in 2006. He was a fifth-round pick.
Okay. Wow. That's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Right. But what I want to look at is, like, skill set. Because, one, to say he does clear waivers and he's on it and he does make the practice squad, but he is still eligible to be snatched up by another team who may have a running back that goes down they can pick from my practice squad.
I'm sorry, I just want to correct myself. Pepper did get activated for a couple of games in December that year. So,
but at a training camp, he was put on the practice squad.
Yeah.
So that still counts. Right. I'm sorry, Dre, go ahead.
All right. So I just think he's going to make the 53, and the odd man out is going to be Shane. He's going to be Orleans Darkwa. And I think this year is probably going is Andre Williams make or break year. I don't think they'll cut him this year. I think they'll give him the opportunity to show what he's done with the martial arts and the losing of the weight. You know, I think they'll give him a chance since he's been working on his hands. And plus, his skill set is kind of different from everybody else that's currently on the running back squad. He has the size. He's more of a power back, whereas you still have, you know, Rashard is probably a hybrid of the two. You know, good hands, you know, can power run through, you know, in between the tackles, run up the middle. But you have, when it comes to power and short space, Andre Williams right now has the thighs that the rest of the running backs don't have.
Well, Dre,
so I see what,
the way I would approach it in the preseason is this. The first two preseason games, I play Shane Vereen and Rashad Jennings a couple snaps each. They play maybe 6-7 snaps
and
combined.
Get them out.
What I mean, you have nothing. You have nothing else to learn about those guys. So
No. When
you're talking first and second down, I'm rolling Andre Williams out there for 15, 16, 17 carries a game. I'm giving Bobby Rainey a chance on third down. You're mixing Darquan Perkins in the second half of those games. But to me, I would be shocked if Andre Williams did not lead the Giants in carries in preseason games this year. Because you're right, I think you need to figure out what he has, and if you do pound it with him, is he in fact the guy that's going to get better throughout the game? We don't know that. We think that, but I think in the preseason this year is when you got to find out.
Right, and I agree. And that's, I was just looking at it, and with my understanding of the practice squad, I just knew Paul Perkins, that was my prediction, that he was going to make the 53, and Orleans Darkwa would be the odd man out. Rainey, I think him coming in was at competition, but primarily his presence on a team is competition and pretty much to showcase what his skill set for another team that may need a running back. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Dre.
Right.
And you know what I think Rainey is? I think Rainey is your rainy day fund in case, God forbid, Shane Vereen gets hurt. Because that's who Rainey is the backup to. That's who Rainey's competition is Vereen. And we know Vereen's not going anywhere because he's Shane Vereen. He's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's where Rainey's skill set falls. He's your kick returner and your third down back. That's what he is. He's kind of like David Megan. That's kind of what Bobby Rainey's skill set is. That's the type of role he would fill if you happen to be on the roster.
I think that, you know, Marshawn Copridge from Illinois State, the FCS back who's here, is the guy most likely to be a practice squad candidate. If you're looking for someone on the running backs committee right now
who
could be a practice squad guy.
There aren't a lot of, like, practice squad type of guys at that position. You know, a wide receiver, you have plenty.
And
you have, like, three or four guys that could be practice squatters at wideout.
But what I'm thinking is that Kopech could be a guy who could pass through waivers.
Sure.
He was signed as an undrafted rookie free agent.
Agreed.
Level of comp was a big question with him.
Yep.
So if he shows something, I don't necessarily know that another team is going to take a chance and grab him for their 53. I think he's the kind of guy who's a really good suited to the practice squad kind of guy.
With you. Sean in California, he's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings. Sean, what's going on, pal? Early morning for you. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, it is, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing great.
Hi, long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm actually have to sneak out of my work office real fast.
Thanks.
I listen every day. I never had a chance to call in because, like I said, I start at 9. So I'm always launching emails and doing some stuff while listening to the show.
Great.
I want to say... long-time Giants fan, so as long as I can remember. I just wanted to make some bold predictions.
Oh, I like bold predictions. They're going up on the wall.
I've been listening to the show a long time, and I honestly feel that our second-round pick, the Sterling Shepard, I mean, like, I loved him in Oklahoma. Every time Oklahoma was playing, I was excited to watch them because of him. And when we picked him up, it was like everything just aligned. I believe his first catch in the NFL is going to go for a receiving touchdown. And I believe that's not going to be over the top. I believe Eli Manning's probably going to show him a short route, and it's going to be him breaking tackles and taking it home. And I believe his first reception in the NFL is going to be for a receiving touchdown.
All right, I like it.
My next prediction is I'm just going to ask that. I'm going to get this out of the way. I believe that Eli Manning. I never had a chance to call in and talk about the draft. When I heard his name, yes, I believe I was a bit shocked, but I believe that was a smart pick, being that he can come in and he may not have an outstanding, like, rookie season, but I believe he's going to make some plays for us when he is on the field. And I believe that USC, being that this is probably coming to his final quarter of, you know, of his NFL career, I believe that Eli Apple is going to be our next top corner, and his name Apple is going to... If people's gonna know his name in New York and throughout the league in a couple of years, he's gonna be a top ten corner in the NFL in the next 3 years. I believe Eli Apple. I believe his breakout season is not gonna be this year. It's gonna be next year. I believe Eli Apple is really gonna take this off season and come in next year and 2017. I believe Eli Apple will be our corner.
Well, Sean, that's a real, real good viewpoint, but I don't know that that's a bold prediction.
That's not a bold prediction.
Okay.
My bold prediction is, I know our offensive line, I know we can still use someone, but honestly, I'm comfortable with our offensive line. I believe Newhouse will step it up. If he does get that start, I believe he will step it up. I believe the Giants with our offense this year, and I was so happy, and I'm just going to get this out of the way. I had a bold prediction by myself. I was talking to all of my friends, and I never called in. I told them that what will make this team a better team if they just hire Ben McAdoo as the coach and they hire Mike Sullivan as offensive coordinator for Eli Manning. Eli Manning has a phenomenal career, and he's reaching his end of career. And why not just keep it in-house? And I love the fact that they kept it in-house. And with that, I believe that the Giants are capable of going 13-3 and ending the drought, and we all know what happens when Eli Manning makes the playoffs, so I'm just going to end it like that.
Thank you, Sean.
Great call, and 13-3. Now that's bold.
That is
that is bold.
You can call something else too, but I can go with bold. good stuff, Sean. I appreciate the optimism.
And
it's
I
going
love
up the, on the wall.
And I love the fact that he was able to squeeze a phone call in so early in the morning at his work.
I know.
That's nice.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we moved the show to noon is so people on the West Coast would be able to listen. We used to do it in the morning, but we lost West Coasters that way.
Yeah.
So we want to reach our folks out west. All right. Now, Jason in Maine is next, and I hope Jason's going to prove that not everybody that called the show from Maine have a slight chemical imbalance in their brain. Jason, what's going on? How are you?
Hello.
Pretty good. How about you guys?
Doing great, Jason. How are you?
Good.
I live about 5 hours from Charlie, so.
Okay, good. Get as much distance between you and him as possible. That is the best piece of advice I can give anybody.
Oh, my.
I love the guy, though. I like
so
I
do we.
A lot of what he says. But
He's fun.
I do want to talk about the offensive line. I just have questions about it. I know the six guys pretty familiar, but what I'm wondering is, outside of those guys and Bobby Hart, the five starters and Bobby Hart, can you tell me who else we have on our roster and if you think they have any potential of being good, maybe not this year, but in the years to come?
All right, well, here are the other offensive linemen. I'll give him some names, Paul, just so he has them. Adam Geddes is a guy that's been around for a while.
And I think backup guard.
I think he will be your backup guard, and he's also playing some center in the spring. So I think Adam Geddes is probably going to be your backup center and guard, if I had to guess. Dylan Farrell is and Ryan Seymour are second-year guys that have come in here that will also play inside. Shane McDermott is a first-year player out of Miami.
Then he's an interesting prospect, by the way.
Why do you say that?
He is.
I honestly don't know much about him.
He is one that they're looking at along all the spots on the offensive line. He seems to be the jack-of-all-trades, Mr. Versatility.
I haven't seen him at tackle. He's been out there?
I think he has taken some spots, some snaps out there. He's primarily a center by trade.
Right, and then you have Brett Jones, who was here last year on the practice squad.
From the CFL.
No, he was put on IR, actually.
He was IR.
Excuse me.
He'd be the front runner right now as the backup center, but again,
him and Geddes.
And Geddes is doing some center stuff. McDermott's a center by trade. So the versatility could be a big factor.
And then the guys outside, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. Stingley's the veteran. He's 27. He's been in the league for
some
6 years.
In the spring.
Correct. You know, I think if you had to give somebody the leg up as a swing tackle, I guess maybe it's him simply because of the time he spent in the league. You got, let's see, Jake Rogers at tackle. Emmett Cleary, who was here last year, he was on the practice squad. He's a guy that's going to compete for that swing tackle spot. Of course, you have Bobby Hart, too, and he's your primary backup tackle. He's going to be your first guy off the bench, you would hope, but then those other guys will then compete for that second spot. Remember, none of those guys, really, Jason, were high draft picks, per se. So I think you hope you can develop them. You know, Geddes has been in the league. I think he would do yeoman's work if he had to play, to be honest
with you.
He's
a scrapper.
He's a scrapper.
I like Geddes.
He reminds me of almost like a poor man's Kevin Booth. That's what he reminds me of. He's a poor man's Kevin Booth.
Much lighter Kevin Booth.
Wow. Most of us are. What else you got, Jay?
The only other thing was I wanted to know a little bit more about, is it Dante Deion, cornerback?
Deion. Dante Deion. He's from
Deion,
Boise State. He's a very diminutive fella.
Yeah, tiny fella. Lance loves him.
But he, I called him the other day in one of our reports. He's kind of like the fly in the soup for the offense because he's all over the place, and he's very annoying to offenses and wide receivers because he is so quick, and he's got such moves, and the speed is there, and he's just...
And he talks. He's loud. He's fun. He's laughing.
He's like a gnat.
You know who he reminds me of?
He's annoying.
He reminds me of Charles James.
Except he's probably got a little more quickness.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's only 5'9", 165 pounds. So, yeah, you better be quick.
Charles James had some real physicality to him for a little guy.
But they're both slot guys. And they both were chatty. They were both fun-loving guys. That's why I think he reminds me of Charles James.
But he buzzes around the field like a fly or a gnat. Or a mosquito. He's pesky as hell.
Okay. And he was injured, right, in college?
Jesus, you know what?
That's a good question.
At one point, he might have been... I thought he played last year.
I mean, he has double-digit career interceptions in college. I think, 13 maybe?
All right, go ahead. Well, get to your next point. I'm going to check this right now.
Well, that's pretty much all I had. I just had some questions about those guys, but so I'm good, so I can take the rest off the air.
All right, appreciate it. Let me see what I got here on Dante Deion.
He had 35 tackles, 24 solo, and 4 picks, missed 3 games last year. With injury, and
I don't
I'm
have
trying
my,
to see what it was.
I don't have any of my draft guides here to get his exact college stats, unfortunately.
7 pass breakups, 3 tackles for a loss. I don't see the injury that he had, but he did miss 3 games. They listed his fastest 40 time was 4.49, and he's 5'9", 158 pounds.
And I'm sure they wanted to play a little heavier than that.
Well, you know. But again, he plays fast, and he's got quicks.
He does.
He closes on the ball really well.
Agreed.
He's been an exciting guy to watch. He had a pick six the other day, which was really exciting.
Here we go.
I'm looking for his injury, though. What was his injury?
I'm bringing it up here. I forgot.
You got his injury?
I got one of my Brewers draft guide on my computer that I can bring up in my digital format. I just got to find the corners here. Let's see. It's linebacker.
The funny part about him was he's now going up against another small fella, Matt Smalley, who's from Lehigh,
yes.
Patriot League guy. And there's probably only going to be room for one of those two, I would think.
And both those guys are also practice squad eligible, and those are guys that can fit in that
No
squad.
Question.
Right.
But, see, I don't think you want to go with more than one Smurf corner on your team.
Smurf?
Yeah, he's...
You know, like Dante Dion,
he's
call
small
him a Smurf?
And he's blue. He's a Smurf.
He's only blue when he has the Giants jersey on, by the way. I should point that out. He's not like blue-skinned
individual.
But
that's the only time fans are going to see him when he's blue.
Oh, Paul. You're funny sometimes.
In any event.
You're funny.
All I will say to you is this. He's made a very good impression so far here at the OTAs. Now, what we need to know is when they start to hit and tackle, how does he hold up when he's got to hit and tackle against bigger, stronger, faster NFL players? That's something we're going to have to find out.
Nope. He's not on his top 50 corner list.
And we're going to have to also find out, John, special teams.
Yeah.
How's he going to do on special teams? Is he a guy who's going to be able to get down there and provide some type of resistance on specials when he's on the coverage units? Knee injury, by the way. He had a knee injury. I found it. And so, I don't know. But right now, here's what he has done.
And 14 interceptions and 25 passes defended in his 3 years at Boise State, including 7.5 sacks.
He has. Oh, I should mention this because after the Giants signed him, I did go back and look at some cut-ups on him. He is very quick on the corner blitz.
Yes, he was. He is. That is
very
correct.
Quick on the corner blitz.
That is
blitz.
Correct.
Here's what I will say. He has put himself on the radar for training camp. He is one of those guys who they're going to be looking at very closely because he has injected himself into the conversation in the spring. Now he's going to have to take it to the next level.
201-939-4513. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. If you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football and fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. It's as simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Andres up in Rochester wants to talk Eli Manning or Eli Apple? Hello? Andre, go ahead.
I just want to talk in general. I just want to get back to your guys' conversation about Bobby Rainey.
Yeah.
I had thoughts about why he, this Giants signed him just because of the cruise effect.
Go ahead. What's your point, Andre?
Points. You don't want if Cruz does not come back 100%.
Right.
You want Dwayne Harris as that second receiver, so you bring Bobby Raymond in as insurance.
Well, I think they would like to think if Cruz can't come back, I think they'd like to think that maybe Sterling Shepard could be the number two receiver.
Right, but I think at that point you're thinking if you need Harris to have even if he's the third receiver. He's going to play 70% of the snaps.
Oh, he's thinking Rainey returns
kicks. And he's thinking
kicks.
Rainey does kicks.
Oh. That, again.
By the way, I think Shepard could do punt returns too, by the way.
I would like to see him back there. I'll tell you that. Look, everything is open right now because we just don't know what Victor Cruz's status is going to be. And there's no question that special teams is going to play a big part at the back end of the depth chart as to what the Giants are going to do. Because there were a lot of questions back there, a lot of competition.
And we're not going to know about Cruz for a while now.
We're not.
Now, he said at the town hall the other night that he's running some routes full speed. I saw him today working on the side. He looked like he was running pretty hard. Mm-hmm. But, again, he's not going to do team stuff in minicamp next week. They've already said it. They're going to try to get him back for training camp. So until we walk in the door on July 28th when the players show up and the first practice is July 29th, we're not going to have any idea what Victor Cruz is going to be. I'm hopeful because, quite frankly, last August 1st or August 2nd, a couple days before he left for Cincinnati, it looked like he was good to go.
Sure did.
Until the calf injury came up. So we'll see. But until we see him out there and I see him practice 2 or 3 days, recover, come back, and be okay, I can't get too excited.
I agree.
What else you got, Andre?
Yeah, and I got to say, as a Giant, I was a little happy to see Eli on that list, but seeing him under Phillip Rivers, nah, there's something wrong there.
Well, remember
one thing.
The criteria
is they are asking all these players to make their own 22.
Right.
And they bundle them all together, and they see who comes up at top. I'm guessing. All right? And I could take your thoughts off here. Thanks, guys, for having me.
You know, I don't know how they vote for that, to be honest with you.
I don't know either. I've never seen the ballot. But here's what I will say. I know that they do make it isolated for the previous season. In other words, the list that they're putting out is who are the best 100 players in the 2016 season? And that's it. It's isolated. Look, I've said this a million times. I'll say it 5 million more times. If you want to win a championship on the football field, you want Eli Manning. If you want to win a fantasy football league, take Tony Romo or take Phillip Rivers. It's that simple.
Phillip Rivers got his team to the AFC Championship game a couple times and played on a torn ACL. Let's not kill Phillip Rivers here.
Killing him.
Think of it this way.
Big stats guy.
Remember 2 or 3 years ago when we were defending Eli Manning for having a terrible offensive line and no defense, and it wasn't his fault? What do you think Phillip Rivers had for the last 4 years?
I understand.
What did Tony Romo have for 4 years in Dallas with no defense?
My preference, the guy with the 2 Super Bowl MVPs, if I'm trying to win a game on the field.
You want to pick Eli Manning over those two? I think it makes sense. I have no argument with that. But let's not downgrade those two guys. They're excellent quarterbacks in their own right. That's all I'm saying.
No question. And big-time stats guys.
What does that mean?
Fantasy football people, enjoy Phillip Rivers and enjoy Tony Romo.
Well, Eli Manning was enjoyed by fantasy football folks last year.
Last 2 years, actually.
So is Eli Manning now a stats guy?
No.
Why not?
He's got 2 Super Bowl rings and 2 Super Bowl MVPs.
But now you're imputing Phillip Rivers' inability to win when he brought his team to an AFC Championship game on a torn ACL.
I'm just saying. You know how I feel about fantasy football. And how I feel about how people view certain players in certain ways because their fantasy stats blow them out of the water. I don't care about fantasy stats.
That's fine, but statistics do show you something. You can't just throw them away.
I understand.
I don't know why you have to impugn Phillip Rivers and Tony Romo. I'm not going to move on because you're killing two perfectly good quarterbacks for no reason.
I'm not a fantasy football player. That's all.
Okay, so that means Tom Brady stinks, too, because he's a great fantasy football quarterback. Aaron Rodgers stinks, but he's a great fantasy football quarterback.
He's got a ring.
So is Roethlisberger.
He's got rings. Brady's got rings. You've named all guys with rings.
Paul, it's a team sport. We've been through this a million times.
It is a team sport.
So Dan Marino's just a fantasy football quarterback, right?
Dan Marino got to a Super Bowl.
Oh, so if he get there, it counts.
It does count for something if you get there.
But if you don't win the Super Bowl, then it doesn't count.
Well, let's put it this way.
How many do you have to win for it to count? Do you have to win more than one for it to count?
No, you got to get there, though. That's a big deal to get there. And I know there are a lot of factors that can prohibit or prevent a guy from getting there.
A million factors.
There are a ton. And so I don't disagree with that. But I do think there is a certain it factor. I had an offensive coordinator tell me many, many years ago back in the 90s. And he said to me, there's a certain it factor about guys where if you are in that situation where you're in a conference championship game or you're in just a playoff game even, there's something about that guy that makes you feel like you've got a better chance to win than if you just had somebody else. There's this it factor. And he never could explain to me exactly what it was, but when you watch the game long enough, you know what it is. You just feel it. It's an it factor. Eli's got it. Some guys just don't, you know. And it's a shame, but they just don't. And Dan Fouts, one of the most prolific passers that this league has ever seen, never got to a Super Bowl. And who would argue about his ability to throw the ball and about the guys he had catching the ball? But you know what? There was something about Dan Fouts. You just never felt you were going to see him in a Super Bowl. And I know their defenses were terrible, but they had a running game. They had some good running backs when he was there.
And the Eric Coryell with Jefferson. And
they had everything. They had everything that should have been able to get you there. But he didn't have it. Doesn't mean he's not a Hall of Famer. It just means he's not a champion.
Do these guys have it because the better teammates put them in the opportunity to show that they have it, and the other guys not have it because their teammates weren't good enough to put them in the position to show it?
Well, it's a hard thing to describe and to define because a guy like Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl with Baltimore, and he was not a great quarterback, but he won a Super Bowl. So it's very hard to define, but it was the Ravens' defense.
Brad Johnson, Buccaneers.
You know, absolutely. So you don't have to have it to get to a Super Bowl, but if you don't have it, it's a lot harder to get there because you need all the other components to drag you in. And that's what happened with Brad Johnson. That's what happened with Stan Humphries. That's what happened with Trent Dilfer. All the other factors helped drag him in. There have been a lot of great quarterbacks over the years who are Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but for whatever reason, you just never felt that they were a championship guy.
See, but my whole thing is that when you eventually base your argument,
I had to open this up
because when you eventually base your argument around something that's undefinable, I have trouble.
It's hard,
having
John.
I have trouble having the discussion. You know what I mean?
Like I said, I remember a guy.
I don't want to spend too much time.
All right, I will only close by saying. The offense coordinator who talked to me about this and said, you know, this it thing, and he couldn't define it, and he'd been in football for decades.
Well, nobody can. It's his whole thing. LeBron and Jordan. Jordan has it. LeBron, right. What the hell does it mean?
You can't define it.
What does it mean?
You can't define it. But the one thing I will say is, you know, when you're watching a quarterback who has it, you know it, you feel it, and when you're watching him play in the most important games of his season, you feel much more confident that that team is going to win because he has it. And you can't describe it other than you feel it when you're watching the guy play.
And the funny thing is, some of those guys that do rise to the occasion in the biggest moment, those guys actually aren't the most consistent guys through your 16 regular season games, which is interesting.
Phil Simms had it. Jeff Hostetler, I don't think, did. But yet, he won a Super Bowl for the Giants.
All right, let's get back to the calls. 201-939-4513. I'm getting Twitter going on this. I don't want to derail the whole show.
I know.
Stefan in Illinois. Stefan, what's going on? How are you?
John, Paul, it's always a pleasure to talk to you guys. Paul, you're like an encyclopedia when it comes to the NFL, especially to the Giants. So it's always a pleasure to get on the call with you.
Nice,
Stefan. No
call.
Problem.
Appreciate
by the way, and you know the thing about Paul Dottino, he's like that encyclopedia you have in your basement that was written back in like 1994. So yeah. It really is focused on like a lot of the late 80s stuff, and it talks a lot about the running game.
Pages are yellow, and
yes.
It's waterlogged. Okay, that's me. I'm not your computer encyclopedia. That's for sure.
Well, some of us old-time Giants still love the running game. So when we look back and we're like, what is this NFL? What are we watching and stuff like that? But my thing is, Paul, when you – I know it's early and I know a lot of fans are calling, you know, screaming at the top of the lungs that we need more offensive linemen and stuff like that. But in your estimation, by a little bit of what you've seen, who do you see as more athletic to be that – swing guard when they want to do like runs and stuff like that, and who do you see that could be more of the tackle?
Well, swing guard, you mean the guard who can pull and get to the outside,
yes,
and lead a play,
yes,
to the sideline? Well,
yes.
I don't think there's any question that Justin Pugh is the best Giants guard that does that. There's no,
mm-hmm,
question about that. He's the best one to do that. And as far
okay.
as and then as far as tackles, the question about the tackle is it the same question?
Well, my thing is, because everybody's calling, you know, Bobby Hart should be the tackle, Bobby Hart should be the guard. You know, don't put in Newhouse because we don't want the same result last year, even though we were like fourth in the NFL in offense. So my thing is, being that Pugh, Flowers, and what's his name, Richbird is the – the guard and tackle on
Richburg's
the left side.
Richburg's the center.
And Richburg being the center, do you see John Jerry and Bobby Hart, or do you see Bobby Hart and Newhouse? You know, like, what do you see so far earlier, so early in the off-season program before we get to training camp?
All right, well, we're going to let you go. John, I want to ask you about this because you actually talked to Bobby Hart. You did a one-on-one that was up on the site.
I think he was playing Madden in the background, by the way. Is that what you heard? It sounded like it was some, like, video game play-by-play. Yeah.
I want to give you an opinion on this, and then I want John to chime in on his conversation with Bobby Hart.
Please go ahead.
To me, and, you know, I've talked about this a lot of times. David Deal, who's played all the different positions except center on the line, also felt the same way. Bobby Hart, I know he's lost 25 pounds or about 25 pounds to try to get himself a little more svelte. I get that. His feet don't seem to be quick enough for me to be able to play guard. I mean, to be able to play tackle, okay? Playing tackle, your feet have to be very quick against speed rushers to be able to readjust and keep your balance and be able to do what you have to do to maintain the pocket. It's a little bit easier to move inside and play guard. He is still, in my mind, the first guard off the bench if the Giants, one of the starters, were to go down. He's still the first guard off the bench. But they've been working him more at tackle in the spring. He's taken guard snaps, but more at tackle in the spring because I think, John, they want to get him more acclimated out there, and they want to find out if his loss of weight can, in fact, help him with his mobility so that, hey, if he's got to be the number three tackle, they want to know he's not going to get Eli killed if he's got
to
go in.
That's the way he's on this team, is to make sure that you can be dependent on to step in at either tackle spot. Remember, he played left tackle when he was at Florida State.
Right.
He's been working at right tackle here in the spring, and he talked about wanting to be more mobile and how he's more comfortable at tackle, but he feels like he can move in there and do a good job at guard as well. But I think with any young player, and this is one of the knocks on him coming out of Florida State, you know, you want to see maturity and consistency, and I think that's still the trick with Bobby Hart. And I think he knows this. He said it to me, that he needs to be more consistent. You need to be able to depend on him, cut down on pre-snap penalties, no mental mistakes, things of that nature. You know, physically, he's strapping. He's got the size and weight you're looking for out of an offensive tackle. He has all that. But is the rest of it going to come along where he could put it together, like you said, where he can be a guy that you can depend on? And I think that's the trick for Bobby Hart.
And quite frankly, too, remember, we went over the depth chart about 20 minutes ago. And the Giants have, right now, better answers at the backup spots on the inside than they do on the outside. Adam Gettis, for example. I mean, they could, in theory, if they wanted to, say Gettis is the swing guard if somebody goes down. Right now, who's the swing tackle?
I will say this, though. And
you know?
This from Nicholas Megna, one of our tweeters. Obviously, the two worst-case scenarios for the Giants in terms of injuries is if either Eli or Beckham goes down. Obviously. Throwing those two aside, I think the three other guys you really can't afford to lose when you look at the roster is that center to left tackle side of the offensive line. If you lose Richburg, Pure, Flowers for an extended period of time,
oh boy,
that's going to be a scramble.
Oh, yeah.
That's a scramble.
Oh, big time.
And that's one of the – and look, every NFL team has them. You can go to every NFL roster and say, well, if A, B, or C get hurt, you're going to have to figure things out.
Sure.
For the Giants, that's one of their scary scenarios. And again, every team has them. Look at Dallas last year. Romo Dez out, finished. They stunk. And every team has those. A couple guys get hurt, you're in a lot of trouble. And the quarterback's usually one of them. But there are other positions where, if, you know, certain guys get hurt, you're going to have issues. And those are three guys that I would put into that category for the Giants.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're still on a seek and search mission to fill out that depth chart, John.
Yeah.
And the competition is going to be hot and heavy because there are spots open. And I'm going to tell you something else. You know, I'm hoping that Bobby Hart steps up to the degree that you're talking about and does it now because I know he's a seventh-round pick, and you have to be patient because he certainly needed polish. And when they drafted him last year, by the way, my understanding was they thought enough of his size and his skill set that he could be a redshirt last year as a rookie, not have to play.
Yeah.
But could be a guy they thought could be worked on.
Could develop into a starting caliber player.
At some point,
agreed.
Contend for a job.
Whether a guard or tackle.
Right.
One or the other.
At some point. They're at the point right now where they kind of need that to happen. He needs to be in that competition now.
And look, they need him to step in and start a game last year.
Yeah. And you know what?
And he did okay.
If nobody else comes into camp, he needs to push Newhouse and Jerry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He needs to.
Yeah, he might doesn't have to beat him out, but he needs to give him
needs
a real
to at least,
run.
At least push him.
All right,
at least.
We only got 6 minutes, Paul. I got three calls. I want to get to everybody. Yeah. So each one of you guys will get 2 minutes. Make your picks. Make your points quick, and we'll respond. Then we'll move on to the next guy. Scott in Washington, D.C. has been holding the longest. Scott, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
John, you know, a couple of times in the last 2 weeks, you said things that really got under my skin.
What's that?
First one was that the goal for the defense is to be a top 15 in the league.
Yeah.
And that
what's wrong with that?
And that Eli should have a target of 12 to 15 interceptions because for the year, because that's good enough. What's wrong with that is it's mediocrity.
12 interceptions?
This team is mired in mediocrity for the last, you know, since the last Super Bowl. This team does not have enough urgency to win. That's reflected in a number of ways. But the clock's ticking on Eli. He's 35 years old, and when you say he's got 3 to 5 years left, I disagree with that. I don't think Eli's going to be playing at age 40 at anywhere near the level he's going to be playing this year.
I think he's
a Hall of Famer. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think he's going to be playing at a starting quarterback level at age 40.
The clock's ticking.
They got $18.2 million left under the cap. I don't want that money rolling over to next year.
Well, Scott, it's going to, because there's no one left. So that money is going to roll into next year. It's just a fact. And look, here's the bottom line. Should the team and Eli make those their goals? No. Obviously, as the defense, your goal is to be the number one defense. Eli's goal is to throw zero interceptions. But as a realistic person observing this team, Eli had the two best years of his career in the last 2 years. He threw 14 interceptions in each year. So if he's between 12 and 15, to me, that's pretty darn good, especially the fact that he's going to throw the ball more than 600 times. It's a lot of throws. And on defense last year, the team was ranked 32nd. They were the worst. If you get to the middle of the league and you're 13, 14, or 15, that's a nice jump. I think that's a great step. And if your defense, let's say, is 14th and your offense, say, is 6th, you got a real damn good chance of making the playoffs.
I'll just add this. If you think the Giants are going to go from 32 to top 10 in defense, then that means OC and Strahan are coming out of retirement. And I don't think that's happening.
Okay, well, we disagree. I have higher goals for the team than you. That's fine.
No, it's not a goal.
One quick request.
No, but Scott,
I see you're wearing the camouflage today. And
yes.
I just ask you to please stop using the metaphor of going to war or going to combat or doing battle in the trenches. You know, that is disrespectful and it's belittling to our nation's soldiers. So if you'd please stop using that metaphor, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks very much for taking the call.
All right, Scott, thank you very much. And if you're a veteran, thank you very much for your service. It's certainly met with no disrespect.
We love the military here. However, I would just say in terms of trenches, that is a football term. It's in the football nomenclature and the football terminology book.
And I honestly
would not shy away from. Otherwise, I'm with you, though, on war and stuff like that.
And I don't think we do that much, to be honest.
We don't do that much. It does get thrown around a little too easily. But trenches, I respectfully would tell you, is part of the football terminology.
Correct.
Right. So.
And honestly, if we do, I apologize. Because honestly, I try not to. Because you're right. It's not battle. It's not war. It's a game. But
great honor and respect for all the military.
And Scott, if we do, I apologize. It's certainly not meant to be offensive. And the other thing that he said I wanted to touch on real quick was he talked about Eli. 5 years might be pushing it, but I think Eli's got 3 years left. Absolutely. I don't see any reason why he can't play minimum two for sure. Three, I don't see why not, to be honest with you. Anyway, 201-939 again. The goal, Scott, is to win the Super Bowl and be the number one offense and number one defense. That's the goal. I'm talking as a outside observer looking in what
that's
a realistic expectation
goal
is.
To have everything.
Right.
That's, lofty goal.
That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
Mike at Oakland, line 3. I'm going to save a psychopath for last. What's going on, Mike? How are you?
Wow.
Hey, glad not to be the psychopath on the call.
The doctor just diagnosed you as normal. Aren't you happy?
That's awesome. Hey, just a quick shout out to the last caller. You know, we don't just talk about war, about football. We do it in everything. It just makes me think of Michael Franti's We Don't Stop song. So I hear where he's coming from. But, you know, just to jump to football, you were talking about kind of quarterbacks that have it earlier. So I got a comment on that and then a quick thing about depth. But so my comment on the quarterbacks with it is, you know, people always talk about Eli being a two-time Super Bowl MVP, right? But what we don't hear enough about is how good he was in the run up to the Super Bowl.
No question.
He didn't just have one great game. I mean, like that 2002, 2007, 2008 run, he threw one interception.
Yep.
He hit Steve Smith in the belly, and Smith kind of like tossed it up. That shouldn't even have been on him. I mean, he was as good in that that postseason run as any quarterback ever has.
Now,
been,
remember,
in my opinion.
Mike, I will say this, and now 2011 is a different story because that was an offensive Super Bowl and an offensive team. In 2007, they also didn't put the weight of the world on Eli's shoulders like they did in 2011. He wasn't asked to do as much in 07 than he was in 11.
Fair.
The same way when Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl, he was a part of the team. He wasn't above the team. And that's how I see Eli in 2007. He didn't make the mistakes, which was key in the Super Bowl run. They wouldn't have made it without him being efficient and smart and not messing up. But he also wasn't asked to throw the ball 45 times in a game like he was, say, in 2011, when much
That's
more
fair.
Responsibility was on his shoulders.
But incredibly efficient in both pro seasons when he had to be.
And that game
and
in Green
accurate.
And accurate.
Accurate.
And the game in Green
yes.
Bay was one of the most special performances I've ever seen in 2007. Phenomenal.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I mean,
phenomenal.
I agree with what you said, but
phenomenal.
You got to look at that Green Bay
nope.
game and
no
what
argument.
He did and just
did,
say,
did,
you know,
did,
amazing
did,
performance,
did
right?
He, did no he argument. Have it at Lambeau Field?
Yes, he did.
Did he have it?
Absolutely. Yes, he did. Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Just wanted to get that out there.
Yes, sir.
So the other thing I just wanted to throw out there is that, you know, every team, this is the age of free agency. Every team in the NFL has holes. Every team in the NFL wants more depth. It's incredibly rare that you have a starting quality guy as a backup role with this today's NFL. And,
that's
you
true.
Know, certain teams have done better jobs than others on that, and that's why they go to the Super Bowl. But I would say that, you know, we're kind of in the hole we're in, especially with depth, because, you know, some unfortunate drafts and some injuries and a bunch of other things. I mean, we are where we are, and we're not going to fix it in one season. So, you know, I understand when I'm listening all the frustration from a lot of fans, and but I just don't think you can. You know, you can only build so much in one off season and one draft. I think they made a nice start. I think
yes.
we did have a good draft this year, even though it didn't go exactly how I would have done it. But that's my opinion, you know. And
yep.
And I guess, you know, my point is what we have to get to is we have to get to the point where, you know, the top performers on our team can, you know, compensate for where we still have holes. You know, are we there yet in this season? I sure hope so. I think we're going to the playoffs. You know, I'm always the optimist at the beginning of the season, and mostly I'm holding my breath that the injury bug stays away from us. I mean, the odds have to be that this season we are not the most injured team in the NFL. But, you know, just expectations is there's only so much you can do in one offseason and one draft, right?
Mike, I agree. Thanks for the call. And now we're going to get the counterpoint to that. And that's Charlie in Portland, Maine, who I'm sure is going to complain. What's up, Charlie?
Hey, John. I just want to say, when you have it, you know it.
And you have it, right, Charlie? I know you're full of it. Does that count?
I didn't say that. It's not up to me, no. But
wow.
Hey, also, in 2007, remember, Eli, you know, we always talk about the Pats had the number one offense. They had the number four defense
yes,
in the NFL
did.
That year.
Good point.
And
there was
Eli
a reason they were 18-0.
Picked them apart. So, which was really good.
Well, hold on, Troy. I wouldn't say he picked them apart. He played well. It's not like he threw up a 350-yard game
and five touchdowns.
No.
Yeah, they scored
no,
under 20 points.
The whole playoff run, he picked teams apart. He picked Green Bay apart.
Green Bay, absolutely.
Tampa apart that year. He's awesome, and he has it, just like Paul was saying.
No argument.
When the guys who have it, it's like it's the eye of the hurricane. When everything is blowing crazy on the outside, on the inside, they're the eye of calm of the hurricane.
No, Charlie, I
Very
agree.
Very few players have that.
Charlie, I
and
agree. And here's the thing, and I agree with you, and I think certain guys do have it. But I think other guys, and I know we're going late here, I apologize. I think other guys might have it too, but they're never given a real opportunity to show it because of the talent around them. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right.
The only other thing I have to say, because I know you guys got to go, is did anybody ask JR at that meeting he had with the season ticket holders anything about the offensive line and knowing that we – I mean, you went through that offensive line, John, and I didn't hear any glowing things about the players that we have in reserve on the O-line. did anybody ask him any questions about that, what he's going to do?
No, look, he was asked about the offensive line. He said, look, Roll, and the answer Jerry Reese gave when he was asked about
typical,
the offensive line by the press. He said, look, we're trying to get better at every position. We're always looking to improve our roster. We tried to improve our roster. We're happy with the guys we have. We'll go to war with them. You know, John, Jerry, and Marshall Newhouse have been in the league a long time. You know, Eric Flowers is young. He's getting better. We really like him. You know, Pugh and Richburg settle into their spots, and we always try to look to get better. We're always trying to improve at every position, but we're going to play with what we have. And that was his answer.
Did he say that? Oh, my God.
I mean,
right.
Charlie, you shouldn't be surprised. It's the same answer he gave when he was asked about it at the draft.
Charlie, there's only one thing I would say to you, and please understand this. It's not a cop-out answer.
No,
but
it's not.
When you're the Giants and you haven't made the playoffs in 4 years and you've got a lot of work to do in reconstructing this team, you can only reconstruct it to such a degree, even in one draft or in one free agent offseason. You can't fill every single hole to everybody's satisfaction in one shot. You're just not going to be able to do it. And you know how I feel about the offensive line. I've been crying for this sucker to be rebuilt for years. And they have taken steps to do so.
And I don't think anyone's arguing it's a finished product.
And that's the point. It's not a finished product. We know that. I think you know that. I know that. You got to admit to that. But is it enough? Has it been pushed along enough that with all of the other improvements, the Giants look like they can do something this year? I think so. But time's going to tell.
Thanks, Charlie. We got to run, pal.
Okay, guys.
Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. And look, Jerry Reese is going to come out here and trash players on his team.
No.
It's just not going to happen. You know, and you know, he gave the answer that he has to give. I mean, it's the truth. You have the guys on the roster. These are who you're going to play with. Newhouse and Jerry did start a lot of games last year. Your offense was still pretty good. Flowers is into his second year. I think Jerry Reese gave the only answer he could give, and frankly, it's the correct answer.
And I'm not going to lie. I think Russell Okung would have been an upgrade. And they had him here.
They had a bunch of guys
here.
Paul.
But he would have been the biggest name that people would recognize. He was here. They tried to get him in here. And they were hoping he would stay. And he wound up signing somewhere
else.
It
was pretty obvious that they were looking for offensive linemen. Sometimes things don't work out.
Right. And so, Charlie, you have to understand that. They didn't look. As much as I would love to have had them draft one, they didn't sit on their hands in free agency. They went after guys.
And if the right guy
they didn't
was,
get them.
And if the right guy was there, they might have drafted him.
So
that's what happens when you pick 10th. If you don't pick first, you don't always get the guy you want.
And finally, in closing, Coach McAdoo said the story is still being written.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Minicamp next week. Coverage on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Have a great weekend. The weather's supposed to be fantastic. We'll see you next week. Take it easy.